It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here with some big stories. We'll talk about Windows 8.1 Update 1. It's due any minute now. What can you expect? We'll also chat a little bit about the big Titanfall launch over Mary Jo Foley's dead body and have some enterprise stuff, too. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 353, recorded March 12th, 2014. Made you look. Windows Weekly is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Windows. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code Windows and you'll get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code Windows314. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers Windows, Microsoft, Xbox, Azure, Hadoop, and all that jazz. It's an interesting mix.
It really makes no sense at all.
Some might call it an unholy alliance. On the left, on my left shoulder, the angel that is Mary Jo Foley. On my right shoulder, the devil that is Paul Thurrott. He has a massive, a bucket, one might say. Is that coffee in there?
See, people see my my profile picture, and I think they couldn't possibly have a mug that big.
He does. That's the mug from Win Supersite, Supersite for Windows.
It's also the mug from So I Married an Axe Murderer. Excuse me, I ordered the large cappuccino.
I think we're going to need a bigger mug. Mary Jo Foley, what are you imbibing today?
I need to be imbibing something stronger, but I'm only imbibing water.
Delicious water. It's the fluid of life. Mary writes it all about Microsoft.com. And a little later on, we'll hear some metal sawing, hammering, and construction. So,
and probably sneezing and sniffing. A little bit of everything.
Do you want to mention that Xbox One thing real quick off the top, just in case it's a limited time thing? Apparently, somebody told Paul. You can get a deal.
I assume, if you're listening live, at least, you can head over to the Microsoft Store. Apparently, the only way to test this would be to actually check it out.
Let me do it.
But purchase a Titanfall bundle for the Xbox One. Okay. And I've been told by Bart W., let me just make sure that's correct. Yep. On Twitter that you get a $100 discount on checkout.
So the Titanfall $3.99. edition is $4.99.
Well, the Xbox One by itself is usually $4.99.
Yeah, so that's a deal.
Titanfall is usually $60. And so
I already have two copies of Titanfall, so I'm really kind of overdoing it here.
Right. I think you just get a code, though.
And then I don't need anything extra here. I'm just going to. Oh, and then this is a deal. Add for $40, the gold. So yep. Let's review the Xbox Gold. You need Xbox Gold, unfortunately. Don't leave that out. You really can't do anything on an Xbox One. And here it is, minus $20. What is it? $5.39. Now, do I have to actually buy it before it'll.
That's what I mean. I think you actually have to check out. It says upon checkout. Now, if this doesn't work, I'm going to give you this guy's email address.
Let's log in. It's going to say, Leo, we know you, and we're going to charge you $100 more.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So far, no reduction in cost yet. You actually have to buy it?
Yeah. I believe so.
You can cancel the order, though, can't you?
You feeling lucky, Leo?
I need another Xbox One. Why not? I don't need
enter promo code one. Does not work in Canada. Works on USA site.
Oh, you told me there's a promo code?
It says enter promo code one, just the number one.
Where's that this go?
This is Frederick Edwards. We're just kind of, I can't believe we're going through with this.
Well, see, here's the promo. You didn't mention the promo code, so now I'm sitting
This is
here.
New.
Okay, yeah, so change. Do I have to go back? I think I have to go back. Just looking here.
Maybe you have to clear out your shopping cart.
Do I want to send the form again? Yes, I do. Let's send that form again.
Now you will buy two Xbox Ones.
Oh, crap. I think so. How do I apply the code? I think I have to start over.
Yeah, just go back to Microsoft Store. You can't click on the icon. That would be too easy.
Having spent
hours on this page myself over the past
Couple. Let's do it again. Store.microsoft. And I probably have to empty my shopping cart now.
Now someone's telling me he doesn't think it works anymore.
Oh, you're going to kill me here.
After all
that. Add that to my cart. Okay. Fortunately, it doesn't seem to remember that I added it once before. Review and checkout. I don't need a service.
Yeah, this whole checkout system they have is horribly broken. I was trying to order that power cover the other day for the Surface.
Did you ever order it?
Where do I?
Yeah, it took me 2 days.
Do I have a promo code? What is it? O-N-E?
Just the number one.
The number one. Now, this should do it now, right?
That's a good point, yeah.
If it works, it should. I mean, we should apply
this. Probably like the employee
invalid
code or something.
Valid promo code.
I guess it's over.
Wah. Satya called via the red phone and said, right. "Cancel that code."
Not for you.
That is not going to work for you. And it doesn't matter. I guess I'm fine. Yeah. I already own one, and one is enough.
You don't need it.
Speak for yourself, Mary Jo.
Let it go. Let it go.
It's not. It's. How do I? One, O N E, capital O N E. It should be one. All right, we got to do this again.
No, it's over. I've heard from numerous people.
Well, that was quick. This is a trend.
I think it was
now
a mistake.
This
is the kind of stuff that happens. It's that tip we had a couple of weeks ago, where you could keep stacking up your promotional SkyDrive storage or OneDrive storage,
right?
And then they wrote me and they said, yeah, we were just, that was not supposed to be there. Sorry.
Well, this is the show to listen to. You should tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific because you never know what you might hear. 2 p.m. Eastern. Tune in a few minutes
early. That's true on so many levels.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Now I've bought four Xbox Ones.
Right. Lisa's going to be like, why is there a $15,000 charger on a MasterCard?
All right. We do have actual stories, actual things to talk about. Oh, my gosh. Not only that, I think Satya helped me out because now my OneNote is in order.
Oh, good. It got fixed.
You did that, Mary Jo. You were able to do
that. I don't know
how
I did it.
So it refreshed and it saw that Mary Jo had put the year ahead. You know what? That's probably what was wrong. Somebody dragged it down before.
Maybe.
Overriding the natural date sort order. This is a show all about Microsoft, all about Windows. And we're here to talk about Windows 8.1 Update 1. It has leaked out, and there are new features emerging. I'm thinking Paul Thurrott has the story.
It has leaked all over me, Leo. It's humiliating.
It's like transmission fluid. Purple. Yeah. All over.
It's like you can wash it with water all you want. It's going to be oily.
Yeah.
I don't remember when this happened exactly. It must have been maybe last Friday night, something like that. But the download links for the various constituent parts of Update 1 were made available through Microsoft's Download Center. And there was some trickery involved at the time about which order they needed to be installed in. Because, of course, when this thing is released publicly, Microsoft will do it for you through Windows Update. This is not something you'll have to deal with yourself. And then hilariously, because Microsoft has got such a great sense of humor, they pulled the one file that was actually crucial for making the whole thing work, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the fourth of the six files you had to install.
Oh, crumb.
Possibly the third, but I had gotten it before that happened. So they also pulled a registry hack, I guess you could do, to force the download through Windows Update. But anyway, a lot of people got it. A lot of people are writing about it. And it's interesting because in the final version of this is actually a couple of new things in there and a couple of slightly different behaviors and so forth. And the big one for me, it's funny because this is such a power user feature, especially even on the desktop. When the desktop was all we had, Microsoft had added these capabilities to the taskbar in Windows 7. The ability to pin apps to the taskbar. The ability for those apps to have taskbar previews so that if you moused over the icon in the taskbar, you know, a preview would pop up. And if it was an application like Word where maybe you had multiple documents open, or a web browser like IE where you had multiple tabs open, you know, each of those different windows would appear in the preview, and you could mouse over to the one you wanted and get to it that way very quickly. But there's also these capabilities that I consider kind of advanced. Some applications can put, or any application can, but some applications do put little toolbars in the taskbar preview. And you don't see a lot of those. The big one was Windows Media Player, so that if you started some kind of a playlist playing, I think actually iTunes does this too, now I'm thinking about it. You could, instead of bringing the whole window up to change the music, you could just mouse over the little icon and you could advance to the next song or pause the playback and all that kind of stuff. And so Xbox Music, which is one of the built-in apps in Windows 8.1, has this same kind of toolbar. So even though if you switch to Xbox Music from the desktop, you go to that full-screen Metro experience, if you just mouse over the taskbar icon, you can control playback from there. And that's actually a pretty significant feature for that kind of application. So that's kind of neat. I'm trying to think if there's anything else major. I mean, the other one was a bit of confusion. Because of the way that Windows 8.1 Update 1 installs on your PCs, you may see different behaviors. So if you're using, if you're doing a clean install of this thing and it's on a desktop type computer, your computer will be configured to boot into the desktop by default. If you are using a touch-based tablet, you install it, you know, clean install, your computer will be configured to boot into the start screen, you know, as you would expect. If you already have a computer with Windows 8.1 on it, which is most people, right, who would install this update, you may have configured those features however you wanted. And so it will actually sync that configuration to this new install as well. And so the behavior is a little hard to figure out. It took me a while to figure this out. And with the help of a bunch of people on Twitter and some people on email, I was told actually how it works, which is that you can enable the taskbar to appear in Metro apps. So if you're running the store app or, you know, Xbox Music or whatever it is, and you want to switch to another application on a traditional computer with a mouse, you can mouse down to the bottom of the screen and the taskbar pops up. And it's weird, you know, it's wacky. It's got that whole kind of Frankenstein thing going on. But, you know, I think the goal here, again, as much as I may not like it, but the goal is to allow Windows to work in a manner that desktop users may expect if that's the kind of computer they're using.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Okay. What if you have like a weird hybrid thing going on? Like you have a touchscreen laptop with a mouse attached and you want to do what you just described, have that taskbar Metro thing so go on.
So in that case, you can. So you'd actually have to manually enable it the case of the taskbar. And the way that you do that is by there's no way to enable that one feature. What you're doing is enabling a feature that shows Windows Store apps on the taskbar, Metro apps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Once you enable that, you can see the taskbar in Metro apps, but only if you're using a mouse. So if you're tapping the screen with your finger, it will work like it always did. But if you use the mouse, you can mouse down to the bottom of the screen, the taskbar will pop up.
Oh, good. I like that.
Yeah. It's not bad.
Also, is it true that if you're using Windows 8.1 Update 1 on a touch machine, you do see the power button and the search button next to your name?
That question is not answerable at this point because that behavior is completely different from machine to machine. So I've noticed on my Surface machines, let's look at this. This one's not a Surface though. I should turn some machines on to actually try to answer that, but it appears, I could be wrong, but I think it differs from machine to machine. So on my desktop computer, I see the power button and the search button, which are new, right, to Update 1. This isn't happening very quickly, but I'm trying to turn on some computers. On a Surface Pro 2, I see both, right? But it's unclear why, because this one has the keyboard attached to it that has the pointing device in it. And is that why it's showing up? Maybe. Mm. On a mini tablet, I only see the one. I just see the search button, not the power
button.
And
you can't set this, right? Like, this just happens. There's you can't change a setting.
Now, I'm going to guess, I don't know, but I'm going to guess and say there's probably a registry slash local group policy type setting for this somewhere.
Yeah.
That these types of things will be figured out over time. But yeah, that's one of the weird things. Like I noticed on Surface RT, it comes up and it has the search button, but not the power button. And I don't know
why. Can you show this people? I've got somebody asking in Twitter, can you show what you're talking about right now?
It's because it might be clearer. It's kind of hard for us to do so.
Is it too hard?
I don't have Windows 8.
Well, I can show you. I mean, I can hold up a
one update one. Yeah. He's going to have to hold it up to the screen. Okay, now I'll describe what Paul's doing as he holds the computer up to the screen.
Well, this is a Surface Pro 2, I guess. Let's see. So, new he's, to...
he's now going to do it upside down and backwards, ladies and gentlemen.
up in the corner here, next to the user profile photo there, there's two new icons. They're hard to see, probably, but the one that's closest to my picture is a power button.
Yeah.
And so, if you tap that, it gets a little menu that...
Oh, that's nice. You. Finally. Hello. No more like charms shut down.
Search, which I find kind of superfluous, right? Because it just opens the same.
But I think that's good. I think that helps discoverability a lot.
Yeah.
It also looks a little bit like the Xbox One.
Yeah. Kind of. And then Surface RT, which actually also has the keyboard on it. We'll see if that screws everything up. Which I will laboriously type my password into. Sorry.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking you these questions, if you were wondering, is thanks to Padre, I got a loaner of the Acer S7. And I've been using it.
Oh, good. What do you think? What do you think?
I really like it. I think I might buy it.
Yeah, I love it. That's my choice. That's what I use.
So this is Surface RT. And you can see there's only one icon in the corner, and it's the search icon. Which, frankly, is kind of superfluous.
Right.
So why? I don't know.
Just to help people, because I think it's to help people who feel when they look at Windows 8, like there is nothing here I recognize. Install base.
Right. Or, you know, like I thought I figured it out, and then I put it on this other computer, and now it's different. You know, I don't know. I mean, this is one of the mysteries of the universe type things.
And again, that's 8.1 update 1, which comes out sometime around build.
Getting next month, I guess.
Next month.
Yeah. So supposedly that we should tell people the dates again because they keep asking. MSDN users supposedly April 2nd. And everybody who's getting it through Windows Update on April 8th, which is Patch Tuesday. Yeah. And it RTM'd last week. So a lot of people were kind of hoping it might show up in this week's round of Patch Tuesday updates, but it did not. That wasn't the plan. So, yeah. And they're supposed to talk all about it at Build, right? So that makes sense that it's coming out on April 2nd, which is the first date, the first day of Build.
Yeah. I sort of previously thought that they've only really talked about this one time, and I thought they gave it kind of short thrift in a way. But when I go back and look at what they said about it, that's kind of all you need to know. You know, it's we've made it better for mouse users. You know, we've made it better for PC makers that want to put it on low cost and low end machines. And part of that is technical and part of it's licensing. And that's pretty much it. You know, it's not Windows 8.2. It's not, it's not even a service pack because it doesn't necessarily bundle stuff up from the past, although that'd be kind of nice too. It's just a little bump. You know, it's a couple of things.
And then the one thing that you can't really see until you get new devices is how it's going to free up space, supposedly on smaller tablets, right?
See, but now I'm wondering. Somebody asked me that via email. They said, "Okay, so I understand how that works, but what if I upgrade to Windows 8.1 Update 1? I mean, wouldn't you know the way that they're compressing those setup files? Why wouldn't they do that to this install too? Wouldn't you save some disk space?" And sadly, having pretty much upgraded all of my machines, I didn't ever think to look at the disk space and try to determine if there was a saving. So I'm going to have to do that now. And I just don't know the answer to that. But I believe that the only or at least the biggest savings are going to be to new PCs because they want it to run on those low-end devices, I think. Now, same thing for resource usage, if you think about it. You know, it will run on 1 gig machines. Does that mean it will run more efficiently on my 2 gig, 4 gig, 8 gig machine? I haven't looked at that. I don't know.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The update one update.
From your updaters.
From your updaters. Leo? Yes.
What is that kind of C-3PO looking Borg thing you've got on your shirt?
Oh, that. That's taking a picture of you every 30 seconds.
It looks like a little Roku device.
It kind of like does, with a clip. The only problem is because I'm slightly round. I say that. That's euphemistically. My belly tilts it just ever so slightly forward, so most of the pictures it's taking are of the ceiling.
It is taking pictures then.
Every 30 seconds.
And this is like a life cam kind of
exactly.
deal?
Exactly. Yeah, it's called the Narrative Clip. And it was a Kickstarter. I bought it on a Kickstarter. It finally came, and now I have literally thousands of pictures, of terrible pictures of the ceiling.
Yes.
Sometimes the sky when I'm outside.
You're going to want to be careful with that thing at night.
Here's a good thing.
In certain situations.
If it's dark, it turns out the lights. Yep. So, I could share these pictures with you, but they're really not very good. I'll review it on Before You Buy next week. It's a kind of a cool idea. It was actually, it was Mr. Bell, I can't remember his first name now, at Digital Equipment, who thought of this whole thing. Gordon Bell, thought of this whole thing. He wrote a book about it.
Oh, this is about documenting your entire life, right?
You know, it turns out life not that interesting. Lots of pictures of stupid stuff, like computer screens. So I might stick it to my forehead. Actually, I asked Lisa for a gold chain. I mean, I can wear it around my neck.
Maybe. Get one of those, like, 70s jogging headband things.
Well, when you clip it to your glasses, it looks like poor man's Google Glass.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thought.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's your lapel, no? You can't.
Yeah, well, if I had a lapel, but I'm wearing a polo shirt, so.
Oh, yeah.
But you could. Yeah, I've clipped it in a variety of places, yeah. I've yet to find the exact.
Please be specific.
Yeah. I haven't thought of that, but that's at least it won't be a picture of the ceiling.
I am on medication. I just want to.
Yeah. So you say MSDN users April 2nd, Windows 8 users April 8th. And of course, there's nobody else. The rest of you, April 8th.
Well, new machines, it probably is already in the hands of OEMs by now, and they're preloading it on new hardware. So
April 8th is update Tuesday. Will this come out as an update?
Yeah.
So in other words, next patch Tuesday, that's when we're getting it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
April 8th expiration on support, too. So April 8th is a momentous day.
Still lots of debate over whether... the end of the line on XP is significant or not. There are those, including Steve Gibson and now Mikko Happonen of F Secure, who say, no big deal.
Sure.
Yeah, as long as you use GPAL edit to lock down all you
as we do,
as we all know, is the right. Hey, a little complaint? Maybe they'll fix this in update one. I guess they won't. So my Acer S7.
You have to edit your host file every day. You'll be fine.
Yeah, just keep an eye on the host file.
just type in **.
Yeah.
Have that redirect to null or whatever.
Use your group security policy to modify your capabilities. And what's sad is, I guess it's, what is the latest version of IE on XP? I think 8 is the last version. So that's really part of the problem. Stop
that
using
is absolutely
one of the things people say is stop using IE as your day-to-day browser. If you're still using XP, use Chrome. At least that's being kept up to date. Take Java off if you don't use it. Make sure you have an up-to-date antivirus. Do not run as an administrator. Run as a limited user. But I've done that. I did that on my Acer S7. But I found an unhappy thing. I'm going to ask you experts about this. So most people who have Windows 8.1 have like the standard. I didn't know there was even a difference, but there's a standard edition and then there's the enterprise edition. So Mary Jo, on your S7, you have like the standard edition, not a pro edition.
Right.
That means there is no security policy plugin. There isn't.
Let the SecPol MSC.
SecPol is not there, nor is G.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
G. So The problem is that's I was going to use that to upgrade UAC, so it would ask me for a password. But on our version, you can't do that.
So
the version you need it on most.
No, that's true. So most of the stuff that's in here should have a corresponding registry key, though, right? I mean, these are still...
Oh, so I could maybe change it in the registry.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
This is not something I know a lot about, but yeah, like the local security policy control panel is not available.
Because what I want it to do is to ask me... I don't need to run as a limited user if it would just ask me for a password in UAC, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was hoping to do that. But anyway, running as a limited user is not the end of the world. It's not too bad. And if everybody should be doing that anyway, no one does because it's a pain in the butt. I bet you're not.
Nope.
You're smart people. All right.
Debatable.
I'm glad you like the S7. And, of course, you have the Haswell one, so it's got great battery life and all of that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I wish the battery life.
I have the i5. And here's kind of a weird tangent. You know how I always complain about the battery life on my Surface RT, and I say even when it's in standby, it drains too fast?
Yeah.
This machine, I've powered it up like twice in like maybe a week and a half. And when I'm on standby, it just saves the battery like it should. So
it's, I was going to say, it's supposed to work that way.
It works the way it's supposed to, unlike the Surface RT, which does not work the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. And I'm not going to pay $99 for battery. Pro pack. Thank you, chat room.
Oh, yeah, just buy the pro pack and you'll get the plug-in.
You get the pro pack so you can run secpull.msc.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, I think on the S7, I've been getting, with intermittent usage, at least like 8 plus hours.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it has a touch screen, which do you use that? You said you use mostly the mouse. You haven't really been using
that. I've used it. Just to mostly scale up the desktop when I'm trying to see something on
the desktop. That's a perfectly good use for it.
Yep.
My opinion is don't get rid of the mouse.
Keep the mouse, keep Windows, the trackpad. This is Windows, Mary Jo, but we will accept begrudging use. You know? That's fine.
Any kind of use at all is fine. Better than no use.
Right.
So good. That's the one I like because it's so thin and light. It's like it's tablet thin, really.
Yeah.
Really,
very easy to carry around.
It's so thin.
Yeah.
Look at this. Can you guys see this?
It's pretty.
Hold it up
a little bit.
Yeah, it's also the white crystal white.
That's just I'm sad because I have the predecessor to that, and they fixed all the little niggly things that I didn't like about it. For instance,
Top of that glass? Is that like a glass?
No, it's plastic. It's glass?
It's glass.
Is it?
Gorilla glass on top of
it. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Maybe yours is nicer than mine.
I think, you know, when I'm holding the icon and this, it's a tough, which is heavier. I'm not exactly sure.
Toss
up.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, no, I'm a big fan, and Acer's stuff is hit or miss. Their low-end stuff I don't recommend, but this higher-end stuff is pretty good. And the one thing I had problems with on that one was when the keyboard is lit up, I couldn't read it. You can only read it when the keyboard is lit up
white with white lights.
Makes the key the key, but I think they fixed that in yours.
Yeah, it's got a little bluish tint now on
so you can at least see the keys. It's really frustrating. I like lit keyboards, but it shouldn't make it illegible in light.
No.
Only.
Right.
That's
right.
Not good.
That's funny.
Minor detail. We're going to take a break. Be back with more. Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows. Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet. Our show today brought to you by our friends at ShareFile. If you share files in business, and you know what? Nowadays, I would guess most business emails have something attached. A PowerPoint presentation, a spreadsheet, contracts, pictures of the grandkids, whatever it is you're sending an email. That's not the way to do it. We know that email attachments are insecure. They're a problem. They can spread viruses. And I always tell everybody, don't open attachments. That's one of the top tips for keeping secure. So how do you do attachments in business? You use ShareFile. Because it looks like an attachment. If you're using Outlook, it looks exactly like an attachment. But with ShareFile.com, you're actually sending a secure link to the ShareFile servers where your file is stored. It synchronizes folders, so it makes it very easy for you to share files. And once your folders are synced, you can use your smartphone to send those files along. So if I go home and I forget to send a file out, I have it, and I can send it right out. completely customized for a variety of businesses. I mean, everything from medicine. Yes, it's HIPAA compliant. Legal, real estate, accounting, architecture, construction. It's really great. You've got document e-signatures using Right Signature. You can somebody asked me on the radio show. Guy was a lawyer, personal injury lawyer, and he wanted his clients to send pictures of their motorcycle accidents, you know, for evidentiary purposes. Now, this is you know, you got to keep it private and secure and all that. And he said, how can we do that? I don't want them to send in attachments. And the share file, you can request a file. As a share file user, you know, the law firm has a share file account. Request a file makes it very easy for even unsophisticated users to send you a file. They do not have to log in. They do not have to set up a share file account. You don't have to have a share file account to receive files. So this is a really good choice for business. I want you to try it and see all the things it can do. 30 days free at sharefile.com. Do me a favor, though. Click the link right at the top where it says podcast listeners. Click here. I know it's tempting. There's a bunch of places where it says try it free, but just use the one that says podcast listeners. Click here. And then put in our offer code Windows. By doing that, you'll let ShareFile know that the Citrix know that you heard it on Windows Weekly, and that's good for Paul and Mary Jo. ShareFile.com. Windows is the offer code. Click the link that says podcast listeners. Click here for a free, no obligation trial. I use it to share audio files with the radio stations, and I can tell you it works flawlessly. ShareFile.com. It was kind of a great thing when I discovered it. We're talking about Windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We continue on now with the latest on Netbook 2.0, the low-end PC. Your Acer S7 is far from low-end, Mary Jo. We're talking about about $1,500 bucks, right?
Yeah.
But the market really, there's a huge market at the $300 price range.
Yeah, there is.
Chromebooks are $250. tablets, yeah. You know, we're talking under $400 in many cases. But there was this whole issue, and Paul's, you've talked about this many times, with netbooks being crap and kind of souring people on the notion.
So, right. And this is kind of the worry here. You know, we talked about this before, this notion that PC makers are under this new licensing scheme can do whatever they want with the hardware. It's not like with the network where it had to be a 10-inch screen or smaller, or, you know, a substandard keyboard or whatever. They can do whatever they want, but the machine has to cost less than $250. The thing that it's funny because I feel like it's almost like excavating an archaeological dig. Like we've uncovered little bits at a time, and I feel like it's kind of coming together now. So sometime late last year, we found out what this low-end, low-cost license version of Windows is. It's something that Windows 8.1 with Bing, and that this version of Windows will be licensed for cheap. It can only be used on these super cheap computers. And the requirement for PC makers is that they can't change the search engine, which is one of the in Internet Explorer, which is one of those things that they would do as part of, I don't want to call changing a search engine crapware, but as part of the crapware efforts, which are really a way for them to make money on these machines, right? They sell little spots, you know, on the machine, they applications, search engine, toolbars, and IE, you know, that kind of junk. And apparently the way that this works is that even if the PC maker uses Microsoft's tools to change the search engine, when the user powers it on and boots in for the first time, it goes back to IE. There's no way to actually change it. So it goes back to Bing, I should say. And that's all it is. There's no, you know, all of the speculation that I had a week ago or whatever about what this might be is wrong. It's just about making a cheap version of Windows 8 Core. And, you know, this is one of those things where I understand why they're doing it. They're doing it for the same reason they did XP Starter Edition for netbooks. You know, they had to come in with a low-cost offering to counter this new threat at the low end. And this time around, it's not netbooks. It's Chromebooks. It's mini tablets that run Android, you know, coming from white box vendors in China and Taiwan or whatever. And they need to have some way to kind of compete. And so I understand it on that level. I'm sort of resigned to it, but I still feel like this is how Windows gets undercut from the bottom, and in this case, from within. And this is just the latest in a long series of things. You know, Microsoft has been desperate to have high-quality Windows running on high-quality hardware. They did Signature first. It took off with absolutely nobody, even though it's fantastic. And then they did Surface. That has not really taken off. And just like in the Windows Phone market, what we're seeing is that the place these things sell, by and large, the volume part of the market, even though there are machines like Mary Jo's and the Ultrabook I use as well, which are kind of expensive, the volume part of the PC market, just like the volume part of the Windows Phone market, is really inexpensive devices. I think once you go down that path, you can't get out of it. You can't. I almost said you can't turn a Kia into a Mercedes, but actually Kia's doing that, aren't they? So maybe you can. So far in the PC market, it hasn't worked.
But I think they have to have an offering here, right? Like other day we were looking at which devices are out there that are running Windows 8.1 that are $250 or less, and I think I found two. And if you walk into a Best Buy, you're an average customer, and you're just looking based on price, and all you see is Android, and there isn't anything in your price range, you're going to just go Android automatically, right?
I think it's a huge mistake.
Do you really?
Yeah, they should not. And I look at Apple, for instance. They don't do cheap iPhones.
Right, but there's only one Apple. Like, Apple doesn't sell 20 different branded models. That's the problem. The problem is that you can say, look, we're going to reserve our products for the high end of the market, as Microsoft. But we're also going to allow the Taiwanese, whoever they are, to make these really cheap machines.
It cheapens the problem is the brand.
But that's what people compare. They're like, okay, I can get a Surface for $900. And I can get this white plastic piece of junk over here for $250. I mean,
They don't have to certify it for Windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they won't. Actually, that's part of the licensing.
Yeah.
So,
But
they're embracing the past, it.
That's the, I know.
They
I
have to be everywhere. I think.
I don't think so.
Microsoft has to be everywhere.
I think they have to be. I wish Microsoft would make the very important statement that you can't get a good PC for $200.
Yeah.
That you need. Yeah. We will not put Windows on anything less than $800.
It's like once you've walked on this, it's so hard to turn around. Like they can't get away from it.
Well,
you know, I agree with you. I wish it was different.
It damages the brand.
Yeah. I saw the signature stuff and I thought, oh my God, this is the future. They're going to turn the PC market around with this. And nobody bit nobody. You know, I think a couple of years into it, Vizio or one of those other PC makers that no one has ever bought a product from actually did, latch on to Signature. But Microsoft came out with Surface for a reason. It wasn't just to piss all those people off. It was because none of them were helping them with this, you know, trying to make Windows a high quality product. They were all, Microsoft's partners were undercutting them at every step of the way.
I think you make a good point, though, about if you look at where Windows Phone is successful right now, it's in the low end of the market. That's really where they're killing, and it's not in the high end of the market, right? And this is something Microsoft has always traded on, being the high volume, low cost supplier. That's been
has changed. They're making hardware now.
They're making hardware now, and they're leaving the low end to their partners,
Don't let them do it.
No, I understand where you're coming from. I agree with you. I guess I'm just resigned to it.
You know what it is?
They want to be Apple so bad, but they're
They want to be a monopoly so bad. They cannot let go of the fact that they, in this coming world, are not going to be 95% of all computing. And you know what? Let it go. And because what's happening is people get the impression that Windows is crap because they're running on crap hardware.
Oh, they absolutely do. Yeah.
So, guess what? It's not crap. It's every bit as good as Apple, every bit as good as OS X, but it's running on crap hardware in many cases. Most people's experience of Windows is on a junky piece of crap computer.
But what about Android in this case, right?
It's crap on a $100 tablet. It's crap, too.
It is. Yeah. People keep buying Chromebooks,
the advantage
of Android,
too.
People bought Commodore 64s. It didn't mean it was a great computer.
Yeah.
Leo,
Commodore 64 wasn't. I don't think Microsoft cares.
It's like,
buy at your own risk.
I think
I can still poke my way to oblivion, Leo, but...
If I were Satya Nadella, I'd say, look, we understand we're no longer being 95% of the market. We just can't because there's so much low end now, and we don't want to play there. We want to make people who have used Windows have a good experience.
This race to the bottom thing makes me sad. I understand they're never going to be Apple. People will never accept them as that kind of a thing. That Microsoft is desperate to be that. I think I wrote this a few weeks ago that if Apple is perceived as BMW in the PC market, which they are, Microsoft wants to be a Mercedes. You know, the thing that counters BMW, you know, that BMW has this thing they have to run against. And actually now they have a bunch of things they have to run against. They have Audi and all the Japanese guys too. But Apple doesn't have anything to worry about. I mean, in that sense, I mean, nobody really competes with Apple in the markets that they choose to play in. You know, we always compare Apple to the broader market because we have to. But when you look at the markets that Apple actually plays in, you know, they're kicking everyone's ass in those markets. And Microsoft wants that so bad. They just can't have
it. If you look at where is Microsoft playing with Surface, right? They are playing in the high end of the market.
That's true.
I mean,
no, right? I agree.
Right. And they've sold like 8 of them. That's my point. Like nobody nobody wants these things.
Yeah.
You know, I can point at one and show you why they're fantastic. You know, and they are in their own way. But
I kept saying I wish they had made a laptop. I would have bought the Microsoft laptop probably.
In a moment, yep.
But there isn't one. And I think they're saying
they can't help but make this thing that's like an iPad. You know, it's like they can't stop themselves. I know.
But you also have to remember they're trying to play the developers as one of their constituencies too, right? And if you're trying to get developers, you have to say, we have the market share, right?
Right now,
they're starting to lose the market share, and that's been their play. Like, if you develop for Windows, you are everywhere, right? And now that message is starting to get diluted.
There are two markets that have always been key to Microsoft that Apple has actually walked away with without doing anything viable at all. And those are the enterprise and developers. And what I mean by that is that Apple early on didn't really embrace like enterprise management functionality at all. Nothing. They didn't do any of that stuff. They have it now. They have MDM, the EAS and all that stuff. But by virtue of the simple fact that the people who are running those companies demanded an iPhone and then an iPad and got them into the companies, Apple's just in those companies. They didn't court those companies. They didn't offer them special volume, you know, price. Well, they do, of course, offer volume pricing, but they didn't really do anything like Microsoft does. Same thing with developers. You know, Apple has these developer tools that, you know, people who use them get used to them and everything, but nobody sane who has ever used Visual Studio and Xcode would ever try to explain to you how Objective-C and their APIs and that developer environment are in any way superior to what Microsoft offers. They're there because that's where the users are. So Microsoft has done this great thing for developers. They've created new languages, which are fantastic. An incredible developer environment, but it targets Windows, and nobody is writing apps for Windows anymore. I mean, it doesn't matter how good it is, because that's not where the users are. This is a problem.
I think it's a problem that's surmountable by appropriate marketing. Then you start selling yourself as a reliable, robust computing experience that is a combination of hardware and software. And you don't allow people to do cheap stuff. Netbooks hurt Microsoft. Did it not hurt Windows' reputation? And by the way, of the 500 million Windows XP devices out there, I bet a third of them are netbooks.
Or netbook class. I mean, you know.
Right.
Microsoft perceived this threat from netbooks, and they thought, okay, what's worse? We make Windows available on these kinds of machines, or we let Linux run away with that part of the market. And they couldn't do the latter, and so they did the former. They're doing it again. And this is a company, you know, for all of the stuff about Sinofsky and his regime and all the stuff that they did, the one thing that they did do, which I have to respect a little bit, was they kind of took a stand. A lot of us didn't agree with the stand, but they were very hardcore about this. This is the vision. This is what we're doing. Now he's gone. And now everything's reverting back to the way it was, which we all kind of like, except for one thing, because the way things were before was designed by committee. And now everybody gets to have their little feature in Windows. It's like that I designed Windows 7 joke from College Humor, where it's like a robot that shoots sparks and is a turtle shell. And it's got like a little piece from everything that everybody wanted. And you can see that happening in update one. It's just a little bit of stupidity everywhere for everybody, you know? Everybody's a designer, you know, and
that's right. That's designed by committee. I don't have an answer.
I'm not, you know, but I'm just saying this is what's happening. It happened before. We're doing it again.
Yeah.
There are pros and cons.
Satya Nadella to say, we have a new vision for what Microsoft represents, and it represents the best possible computing experience.
Well, or the best possible computing experience for the constituency that matters. You know, that was another thing I'd written a little while back about this notion that Windows, where Windows still sells is with businesses. Fine tune it for that.
Yeah,
you know, make it a productivity system. Mary Jo doesn't want touch on a laptop. PC makers are jamming touch down people's throats right now. There's no version of that laptop that she's looking at that doesn't have touch. I mean, why not? Yeah. You know, if people don't want touch, don't give them touch. You know, I don't know. Remember when Windows 8 first came out, it was selling slow right out of the bat. The thing that they complained about privately and then publicly, amazingly, Tammy Rella did this twice, was PC makers didn't ship enough touch machines into the market. That was the complaint.
Yeah.
Right? Well, guess what? Touch machines are everywhere now and it's not selling. So that wasn't it. The problem wasn't the PC makers. The problem was Windows 8. Period.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, though, now that they've been in the volume play area, it's going to be hard for them unless they dump their consumer efforts completely, which is what some on Wall Street want them to do. I don't think they can back away from doing the low end, too.
I feel like if they had made a Windows Phone based version of the Surface stuff, that it probably wouldn't have sold any better. But I think it would have been better just as a closed system. I think it would have been a more complete, better kind of thing. You know, I'm not going to argue that they would have sold more. I don't mean it like that. I think I would have preferred it. And I think a lot of other people would have preferred it. And for the people that didn't want that stuff to begin with, guess what? Windows would have remained the same. And that's what they want, too. You know, ultimately, I think that would have pleased more people. But, you know, obviously.
I think there's an opportunity. I really do, to take the high end. I like the idea of saying we're going to make a business class computers. Then we'll make a high end consumer class computer. And you know what? If you want a cheap computer, get Android because they're cruddy.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah. No, right.
What's wrong with that? That's a strategy. Right.
Let them have a bad experience on Android at $100, and then they'll understand they need to spend maybe $500.
Ask me a lot on the radio show, you know, well, what about this Pantech $100 Android tablet?
And I think it's CVS checkout. You know?
People are cheap. Yeah. I understand people are cheap, and, you know, they can't afford it either. But it's the wrong message to send that everybody can afford a computer because I apologize. It's not the Commodore 64, it's the VIC 20.
Yeah,
that was the cheap computer Commodore followed up with that really was too cheap.
I believe that computer had bytes of free space.
Yeah.
Left, you know, when
it's 4K memory.
You
know,
I think it was really, it was something like
that. Yeah. It's really the VIC 20 is a more apt description. Yeah.
I'm going to take back that nasty gram I was writing to you.
And it almost put Commodore out of business. It killed him. It hurt the computer. Yeah. The computer industry as a whole was set back years by the VIC 20. I'm old enough to remember that. No, seriously.
It was a Microsoftian release.
Because people got it and they said, oh, this is what home computing is? That sucks.
Sure.
I'm not. Thanks a lot. Put it in the closet. And they didn't go back into the market for years. So I really think that there's an opportunity here. It would be a gutsy move. And you know, the board and the shareholders would be pissed. Somebody said, oh, but you lose market share. It's not about market share. Apple, it's about profit share. It's not about market share.
Yeah, no, right. And so, and this is one of those things, like Mary Jo said, Microsoft has always competed in the high volume, low cost part of the market. Apple is obviously, well, we can't say they're low volume, but, you know, with the Mac, certainly compared to PCs, low volume, high cost. And Apple made a lot of money. Apple makes more money than any other PC maker. So obviously that was a good business. Apple has figured out a way to have high volume and high cost. That's genius. You know, Microsoft obviously is envious of this.
Right. And then you
can't
you
look
also
at anything
have to,
they do.
Sorry, Paul. You have to ask, too, where does Microsoft see itself making money in the future, right? It's not going to be on operating system sales, right? It's going to be on services. That's where they're thinking they're going to make more money. So if you think like this, you start to see hardware as a loss leader more than anything else. Maybe they're not looking to hardware for profit and operating system sales for profits, but they're looking to Office 365 and SharePoint and Yammer and all the products that they have that are being sold as services.
Yeah, and it ties into how you feel about Office. I'm sorry, but Office on the iPad. You know, a lot of Windows Microsoft diehards would say, no, you can't ever do that. What are you kidding me? That's you would kill the Surface the day that product came out. You'd kill the Surface. I think that this is bigger than the Surface, and I don't actually think it would kill the Surface, but I think there are people who can't get over this almost theological divide, you know. And I'm one of them, Mary Jo.
I know you are.
All right, let's move on. Surface stuff. The power cover is available for pre-order.
I switched to Pure Rum, by the way.
The power cover is a type cover that has battery in it.
This is great. I'm glad it's out.
They need this. And they announced it last October when they had the Surface 2 launch. It's $200. It was for sale earlier this week. I'm looking right now. It is out of stock. No surprise.
But in the case of Microsoft, that just means what? It's not that they're sold out.
It means
not
make enough.
You mean they already sold out, you think?
Yeah, they're already sold out.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But we don't know how many they made. And also, a lot of people were waiting for this cover. Because it can extend your battery life between 60 and 70%. It works on the Surface 2. That's where you get the 70%. And on Surface Pro and Surface Pro 2, I think you're more in the 60% category. It's heavy. It weighs 1.2 pounds, the cover, because it has a battery in it. So when you add that to your Surface, now you're starting to get up to sometimes close to 3 pounds for your Surface device with this power cover on it. So I've seen some people say, why not just buy a laptop then? Yeah, why not?
Well, because you can still unplug it. You know?
You can. Yeah, you can take off the cover, use it as a tablet.
I look at this as something for existing Surface Pro users, like the first gen.
Yeah.
Because that one didn't really get good battery life. Right. And, you know, you've spent $1,000 on this thing already. I guess you could get another laptop now. It's only a year later. But, you know, $200 now will extend the life cycle of this thing and make it truly usable in the road. I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
Would I buy this new with the device? No, probably not.
Yeah. No backlit keys, people should know. I've seen people say all week on Twitter, it has backlit keys. No, it does not have a backlit keyboard. And the reason they say it doesn't is kind of interesting. They say because the backlighting takes away from the power. I don't know how much it actually would take away from the power, but that's why they're saying they don't have it.
It's a battery.
I know.
How much can it take?
I know. It's crazy.
People have asked, why not a software switch? You could turn it on and off.
I know. That would be kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So March 19th is when the ship date is, which is next week. So that's good.
Yep.
But if you didn't order it, it's already out of stock.
I suppose you could walk into a Microsoft store that day. Maybe they'll have them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The retail stores.
Maybe.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Were people able to pre-order them like in November?
This week. No, week.
So it wasn't like some pent-up demand from Surface owners who bought it.
And by the way, there was no announcement at all. It just appeared on the store. These guys really just know how to market. It's amazing.
But
we're worried about
Microsoft does handle stock differently like than Apple, because Apple, when it gets out of stock, says it will deliver it in April or will deliver it in May.
Yeah.
Microsoft could say that too. I mean, they're it's out of stock.
So, yep.
It's you. They won't let you pre-order for some reason,
which makes no
until
sense.
It's in stock. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They're still trying to figure out retail.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. It's complicated.
It is.
Even the order. This is, you know, I was talking about the Microsoft store website. I was trying to order this thing. It took me 2 days to get this.
Yeah.
So God knows if I'll get it on Tuesday, Wednesday. But
so you got in. Good.
Yeah, if the 2 days. Like, it took a long time.
What do you mean took 2 days?
It would not complete the order.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to blast
you. Only when you entered your credit card, right?
It's just terrible.
Like, you got right up to the point of buying it.
Oh, no.
It took the credit card. Yep. I'm probably going to get 8 of them. You know, my wife's going to be wondering why I have a $15,000 credit card bill. But
holy
I guess
moly.
We'll see.
All right. Surface 2 LTE is now something. I don't know. Not ready.
Getting closer.
Coming soon.
It's something, something.
It's something. Something, something.
There were reports this week that they're starting to stock up in the Microsoft stores with the long-awaited Surface 2 with LTE. It's going to be on AT&T. Microsoft already told us last year. And so we don't know exactly yet when this is going to be for sale, but supposedly it it's going into the stores now, according to, I think it was WP Central who had this first. And so I would assume it's very soon. It's a Surface 2, so it's ARM-based. There is not a Surface 2 Pro that has LTE built in. So you have to go with the ARM if you want the LTE.
It kind of makes... Well, no, because there are computers with LTE.
Why wouldn't you make both, Leo? We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's probably a chip thing, right? There's probably a Qualcomm chip that has both LTE. I know there is.
I think they use the Tegra, though, don't they?
They use the Tegra. Surface? Well, same thing. You want a system on a chip that has LTE built in.
Yeah.
So that's probably what it is.
Well, we have no information about non-AT&T, non-US.
Oh, you don't need that. Yeah, really. It's on a need-to-know basis.
Last year, they said Vodafone also was going to there's be a version with Vodafone support.
Maybe August, September.
Most of these chips now do all the frequencies. So
that's the thing that kills me. Yeah. You know, you were talking about Microsoft going to this kind of high-end model. Why wouldn't their machines all have this as a slot?
I don't know.
Have it be multi-carrier, capable and locked.
Yeah.
Just works anywhere. Buy a SIM, put it in, it works. Yeah. Why not just have that?
Buy a SIM, put it in.
I loved having a built-in LTE on the Nokia 2520 tablet. I thought that was really great. I didn't think it was going to matter that much, but it mattered a lot once I had it.
Yeah, the ability to pay as you go, so you just pay when you need it, is great. It's a great idea. What a great idea. Every computer should have that.
Somebody should have thought of that.
Why doesn't anybody do that, Leo?
Why doesn't anybody do that, Paul? That's such a good idea. Well, you can't accuse them of copying anyway. There's that.
Yeah.
Hey, that Surface Mini, where is that?
You have a cricket soundboard sound you can play?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Supposedly still coming someday.
Is this thing still on?
And while we're looking for the Surface Mini, how about those?
There it is. This is like one of my user group talks.
How about those Surface firmware updates, huh? Thank God we're all done with those.
Leo, we'll never be done with those. This is rapid release.
So a bunch more, huh?
You know, I didn't. Did you look through these at all, Mary Jo? Because the power kit cover is supported. That's big. Yeah. But did you see? Is there anything in there that's notable? I didn't even really look.
There's lots of updates that came out this week for all the covers, not just the power covers. So they updated the firmware for the type covers and the touch covers. I saw some people saying they're yet again updating for the does not wake from sleep problem that users have had. There are a lot of updates. But, you know, I got to say, even though it's a pain, you have to install the firmware updates. But it's great to me that they're updating this every month. And I didn't get an update on the Surface RT. That was the one of the three families that did not get a firmware update. But all the others did. And they got quite a few all across the board.
The other thing I just add to that is it's Patch Tuesday. So you're going to be installing updates anyway. And probably rebooting anyway.
So go ahead and just do some more of that.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, if they're going to improve the system, let them do it.
Yeah, let them improve it. Improve it all around. Yeah. Multiple update
some
time.
Bluetooth updates, some Intel graphics updates on the Surface Pro 2. Nothing like really gigantic other than that sleep issue that's still plaguing some people. But everything else was around power covers and Bluetooth and some wireless stuff too. All good. I actually saw Tom Warren saying his Surface Pro 2 got, he had to reset it and he was having all kinds of problems after he applied the firmware.
Did he do it when it was in the dock?
I don't know.
Because I had the same problem. And
did you?
Taking it out of the dock fixed it.
Wait a minute. Should be in the dock or should be out of the dock?
Shouldn't matter, Leo, is what I'm saying. But apparently, being in the dock was a problem. So, you know,
it's the other way around. You know, you're doing an update. You want to make sure there's power applied.
Right.
All right.
Right.
So you shouldn't apply the update.
I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying I noticed that. Somebody said, I tweeted about it, and someone said, yep. Is it in the dock? And, yeah, that's how I use it. And they said, oh, take it out of the dock. And I did, and it fixed it. Because, you know, you get that Surface update, you know, updating the system screen. Mm-hmm. And then 45 minutes goes by, and it's still sitting there. And then it's an hour, and you're thinking, okay, this is not how long it usually takes. Yep. Just sitting there, not animating in any way.
Okay.
You know, so I reset it, and it was fine.
It would make
That's
sense.
That's really good to know.
This would happen to the experts because, of course, they're the ones who would plug it in before doing the update.
Yeah. Oh, we can barely contain ourselves with glee when there's an update to install, Leo. I actually clap my hands a little bit on
Did
every
you say
patch
goody,
Tuesday.
Goody?
Yeah.
Oh, goody, goody, goody.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly. Do like a happy dance.
Goody, goody.
We need that.
That day was amazing. I had iOS 7.1 to install. I had all these Patch Tuesday updates. It was just an explosion of updates. Nice.
Let's take a break. When we come back, office stuff, Skype stuff, board stuff, and Titanfall. Our show today brought...
Is that still a thing, Titanfall?
Titanfall's still a thing. 24 hours and counting in. Actually, it's not. It's 12 hours and counting.
Internet's still alive?
Not really. Not if you're on a PC. The Origin servers crashed and are still not up. Immediately.
Those people should be punished.
Electronic Arts. You know, I'm torn. See, I've been, you know, between Electronic Arts and Comcast, I'm not sure which is the worst company in America. It's one of them. It's not Carbonite. I can tell you that right now. Carbonite, for many of you, and I hear from you all the time, is the best company in America. You saved my stuff. Carbonite has backed up over the last few years a total of 300 billion files, restored 20 billion. Those are 20. Those are files, 20 billion files of people who would just be out of luck if they weren't using Carbonite. Carbonite is automatic, continuous backup. Backup to the cloud where your stuff is safe and can be retrieved at any time. 50,000 businesses, as long as we're talking numbers, use Carbonite online backup. That's a good number to know because it's not just for end users, home users. Of course, it is. Carbonite is really great for a laptop. I remember somebody called the radio show, said, I lost my laptop. I was sailing to Catalina Island, and a wave hit us, and it went right overboard. But he said, I didn't lose any files because I had Carbonite, thank goodness. Carbonite online backup. You want to try it free for 2 weeks? Please do. Windows or Mac, $59.99 a year for everything on a single computer, but they've got plans for small businesses, for servers, all of that. In fact, they have some really, you know, they have plans where you can send them the hard drives, all sorts of stuff. Check it out. For 2 weeks free, just to go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code Windows. You don't even need to give them a credit card. Just use our name, Windows. And if you do that and you decide to buy, you will get 2 months free with purchase. That's nice. $59.99 a year is less than $5 a month. And then you get 2 free months. I don't know what that does, but it makes it even a more affordable. Carbonite.com. Please use the offer code Windows. Try it free for 2 weeks. Paul Thurrott. Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly on the air. Microsoft Office updates. First of all, I saw a rumor that they, it wasn't a rumor. Microsoft confirmed they are working on Office for the Mac. I'm happy about that. We haven't had a new version since 2011. It's about time. Wait a minute, where are you guys? I don't hear you. You're speaking?
We're here.
Oh, okay.
We're
I'm sorry.
Here.
You're just silent.
Sorry, I muted my microphone so I could blow my nose.
Poor Paul. I'm sorry you're not feeling well.
No.
Yeah, I don't even know what. I don't even leave the house. How could I be sick?
And a free version of OneNote for the Macintosh. And I saw a number of people say, watch out, Evernote. Here comes OneNote.
Yeah. Finally.
I know. Yeah. There's been OneNote for so many platforms. It's already out for iPhone, iPad, Android, and obviously Windows and Windows 8. And there has never been a version of OneNote, a native version of OneNote for the Mac, amazingly. Right. But now Microsoft, according to sources, has built one or is building one, and that it should be released fairly soon. I don't know exactly when, but Tom Warren also was hearing this too from his sources, and he said he thinks it's going to be out this month, which would be really soon.
But if they do it free for the Mac, they've got to do it free for Windows, right? Or that would really, right. People would be pissed.
Yeah. Right. That. So the other part of this rumor is it'll be a free for Windows desktop as well, because right now you get a free version of OneNote for Windows 8, that Windows Store/Metro-style version. That's free. But if you want the regular version for Windows desktop, you have to pay for it because it's part of Office. So supposedly they're decoupling that and making it available as a free separate app for Windows users too, which makes a lot of sense. Evernote is the company they're competing with here pretty much. And so they're trying to add in some more features that would make it this more compelling for people across all platforms. One of the rumored features is this thing called the OneNote Clipper service, which is going to let you somehow sync links between your phone and your PC device browser. So it'll make it more of a seamless experience, is the thinking. And then Office Lens is the other rumored part of this new version. And that's this app that Microsoft talked about a while back that uses optical character recognition and your smartphone camera so that you can capture snapshots and save them up to the cloud. So like almost like if you see a whiteboard snap, you know, capture that. And that'll also be part of the whole OneNote, the new OneNote release too, they're saying, sources, those infamous sources. Microsoft is saying, we have nothing to share.
Yeah, they got a long way to go if they're going to compete with Evernote. I mean, you could see they're just playing, and every one of those features you talked about is present in Evernote.
Yeah.
They're playing catch up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't use OneNote a lot myself. I use it here for Windows Weekly Notes. I use it sometimes for shopping lists, but I don't use it a lot otherwise because I still take my notes mostly on paper with a pen, like a real pen.
You're just a weirdo.
I am. I'm just a weirdo. And, but I talk to so many people who, for them, their whole computing experience revolves around OneNote. It's the centerpiece of what they do. So it's big.
I loved OneNote, and then Evernote came along on Windows only. It wasn't the same company.
Yeah.
And I changed to Evernote, and I never went back.
I did the same thing briefly, but I did go back to OneNote, and I use it pretty extensively. I use it for all my meetings. I use it for all my home swap stuff. We use it to get information about where we're going, and you can look at it on the phone when you're out and about and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it has to be on everything. That's the chief feature of Evernote is that it's everywhere.
It has to be everywhere.
Yeah, and it synchronizes.
Oh, by the way,
everywhere.
So is OneNote now. I mean, it's just not on the Mac. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so I use Mac, so it's not everywhere for me.
No, I'm not trying to convince you to use it. I'm just saying, they're taking.
But it's on Windows Phone and Windows, and it's on iPhone, and it's on iOS.
Android phone.
It's on Android.
They have separate apps for iPhone and iPad.
And actually, they have the web app. I mean, I'm using OneNote on the Mac right now, and that's...
Mm-hmm. It's free on the web.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, no, that's fair.
So it is. It's almost everywhere. I don't know. Will it be on Xbox?
It should be.
You laugh.
You probably open the... I bet you can open the web version of the Xbox browser.
Put it on the Xbox.
Yeah.
Why not?
Interesting idea.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking this app also probably will be part of this Office suite for the Mac, the next version that is coming sometime this year.
This might even be a... trial balloon or a test or all sorts of things. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'll immediately download it and install it for sure. Mm-hmm. You know what they need to do is a Evernote exporter to OneNote. They could do that because I think the Evernote format is pretty straightforward. I don't think it's proprietary. I think it's a bunch of RTFs and PDFs all strung together. I'm thinking. Maybe wrong on that. And apparently the Office on the iPad, this could be imminent. Yes?
Well, I wrote last month about a new thing that I had heard, which was Microsoft wasn't going to wait to introduce the Windows version first of the Gemini release, which is the touch-first version of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote for Windows 8, that they actually are going to come out with Office for the iPad with those same four apps before they come out with the Windows version, which is kind of crazy to think about. And I'm still hearing that's the case, that's the plan. So if Office for Mac is really this year, which it seems to be, and if this OneNote for Mac is imminent, it makes you wonder how close is Office for iPad? It might be very close.
Cool.
Yep.
And now the portion of the show where we make Paul go just a little bit crazy. It's Skype time.
Actually, you know what? You know what happened today, though? In fact, it hasn't been this way for so long. You think I would have noticed it. You called me, yeah. And I answered.
Yeah.
And Skype turned off.
Like it's supposed to. This is the new thing.
Yeah.
The ringing bug.
You think I would appreciate that.
Yeah.
But I don't, Leo. You know why?
Why, Paul? Why?
Because it took him 11 months to fix it.
I just like to play that. It's drive you crazy. We should do an interview with a Skype lady. We just chop it up. There must be enough Skype lady stuff.
I don't actually believe any human beings work on Skype.
Hello. Thank you for calling the Skype call testing service.
It'd be like that thing in Influx, you know, who's like the,
yeah, yeah,
the mechanical thing that interrogates him. Like, it just keeps coming back to the same question.
Yeah.
Is there a problem with Skype you'd like to report? Yeah, it keeps ringing even though I've answered the call. Is there a problem with Skype you'd like to report? Yeah.
Well, we'll see. And finally, the Value Act investor is on the board, ladies and gentlemen.
The fox is in the hen house.
The fox exactly. is in the hen house.
Oh, that would have been such a good headline. I should have done that. Yep.
What do you think about this, Mary Jo?
Yeah. So everybody has heard for months now that Value Act wanted a seat on Microsoft's board because they wanted to shake things up to unlock shareholder value.
They're activist investors, right?
They are. Yeah. Right. And
how much Microsoft do they have? Are they a big?
They have. Oh. They don't have a
0.81%.
What?
Yeah.
Well, right. 0.81. Not 8. 0.81.
Okay.
Right. But they're still a big investor. Yeah. Because if you think about it, who has the most stock right now? It's Bill Gates or Steve Ballmer. Both of them have 4% each.
Right.
So yeah. It's, yeah.
So Mason Mordor is now on the board.
Mason Morfitt.
Morfitt. Sorry. Yes. All right.
That's good. No, you had it right the first time.
And he has not really made his views clear or explicit about what he wants Microsoft to do. But there's been a lot of hints that he doesn't really like them being in the consumer space, and he thinks they should focus on the enterprise. So it's going to be interesting to see the tug of war that happens in the board now, because you've got Bill Gates, Steve Ballmer, and Satya Nadella on the board, plus this guy. And I think it's going to be some very crazy dynamics now that you'll have a board that's much more divided than the Microsoft board has been in the past.
How does this work? I mean, the board is a democracy, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this guy has one vote.
It is, but, you know.
He could be a pain.
Some votes are more one vote than others.
He could take all the crullers before Bill gets there. I mean, he could be a pain in the butt. But he can't change.
Why are there only jelly donuts here? Morfitt.
Morfitt. But he can't really like change. He can't like suddenly make Microsoft an enterprise only company. He's got one vote.
Right. But there are other people on the board who
agree with
also him. Have been kind of hinting that they think they're getting off track with things like the Xbox and Bing and Nokia.
Okay.
Surface.
Okay. So
he has said in the past, not of Microsoft, but you know, before he got to Microsoft, that in his experience, it's better to influence a company behind closed doors because people react badly when you embarrass them in public. And that by getting on the board of the company, he can have that kind of influence where no one will find out about it.
He's going to embarrass them in private now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good idea.
And with all the leaks lately from the board, it'll be public anyway.
Hey, Bomber, your fly's down. I think this is not
made good. You look. I'd be an awesome board member.
Towel snapper. I don't know. It's just what it really is annoying. It's just annoying. The board's going, oh God, that Morfitt.
You know what? This all came about because I think it was Rick Sherlund or someone recommended that, you know, he actually made Microsoft stock a buy so that someone like him would buy a bunch of stock and try to change Microsoft's behavior. And then he did. And then he went to Microsoft and said, I want a seat on the board. And then they said, okay. There was no, you know, there was, they didn't fight him at all.
No,
you know?
I don't know if you noticed this little detail last week in that Bloomberg profile of what led to Steve Ballmer leaving, but there was a little tidbit in there about ValueAct supposedly had a guy waiting out in the hall in the board meeting holding a proxy statement saying he was going to engage in a proxy war if he didn't get the seat.
Yeah.
So they threatened him, basically, to get the seat.
Right. Yeah, so rather than undergo this proxy battle, why don't you come on the board? We'll have an 11th spot. You'll be fun. You'll be like the vote, you know, the tiebreaker.
People always love the guy who gets into the clubhouse by threatening them. I think that's really good. That's going to make you friends. And
if I were him, I would walk in on day one with a baseball bat that had like barbed wire around the end. And I'd be like, I have a few ideas for this company. Let me know if you have any feedback.
I don't understand how companies run, obviously. Just seems like such a weird thing.
Their ability to capitulate is so amazing sometimes, you know?
Yeah, they gave in to Beast Guy Bead.
I think what they were worried about was that the proxy battle would be happening at a very damaging time at the time, Steve Ballmer had just announced he was stepping down. And God forbid that these guys influence that in any way. And so the agreement they got with him was that this will happen when we're done. You know, right. You guys can come on. You can come on board in early 2014. So that's what just happened.
He's got one vote in 11. Mm-hmm. Big deal.
That's still that's a lot more than other shareholders have.
More than me. More than you.
Yeah. 1 in 11 ain't bad for the company the size of Microsoft.
I think they have a Quidditch team. If I'm not mistaken,
a cribbage, a quidditch.
They've got a quidditch quorum. Or cribbage, quibbage or quidditch. All right, it's fun to watch these things transpire. I guess.
Yeah.
And it, you know, one vote if there's a division among the board, you know, that 11th vote can make a difference. It's like the Supreme Court. Only without the gowns.
Right.
Titanfall, did you get up? So I got up very, very, very early yesterday morning so I could download. So here's a question for you, Paul. Mary Jo, if you'd like to go get a cigarette.
Okay, I'll leave.
Right, grab a beer.
I had ordered the disc of Titanfall, and then I realized this is stupid. Don't buy discs. Because then you have to put the disc in to play the game. If you download it, it's the same game, and you don't have to do anything. You just play the game.
Yep.
So am I missing something?
What do you mean?
Why do people buy discs?
I don't think this is going to be happening a lot anymore going forward, to be
honest. I have five discs, and I'm kicking myself.
I suppose if you went to a midnight event and you lived within a few minutes of the store, you could potentially save time by getting the disc. I installed it on Tuesday morning while I was eating breakfast. The whole thing took less than 30 minutes.
I mean, it's several gigabytes. It's not
16 gigs. Yeah. It's
16 gig download.
Yeah. By Xbox One standards, that's not actually huge.
But that is a lot of bandwidth. So some people will not want to do that.
Yeah. Some people just can't do it. I get that, of course. But, you know, and I've done this when I bought Call of Duty Ghost as recently as November for the Xbox 360, you know, you buy the game on disk, you bring it home, and then you install it to the hard drive. It takes a little while. I mean, it's still going to take.
I'm sorry. I turned off your mic back. You do you do have to download quite a bit, even if you have the disk.
Oh, do you too?
Yeah, I think so. I have on the other games.
I've never bought a disk-based game for the Xbox One, so. My intention is not to do that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's saying I'm a one percenter, and I guess you are too, because there's no resale value. But I don't sell my games back usually.
Well,
what if I want to play it again?
I've done a little bit of that, I guess. But yeah, right. That's true. But I'm also not buying a bunch of games, you know? I've only bought a handful of games for the Xbox One. I don't really anticipate buying a lot.
Right.
Anyway, and you know, the game that I play primarily,
Call of Duty Ghosts.
Call of Duty. I think it's fair to say I've soaked a lot of value out of that thing. I mean,
yeah. It isn't cheaper to buy it online. You still have to same price.
Should be.
Now,
could you have bought this at midnight? I didn't do that.
But I did.
Yes, you could do that. Okay.
Yeah, at midnight,
it was available for sale. You download it, and by the next morning, I had it. Yeah. And then there's this $20 add-on thing. I don't even know what it is, but I bought that too. I figured, what the heck? In for 20, a penny, in for $20.
Was this like the season pass kind of thing?
Yeah. Or? What is that?
I assume it's additional levels.
It's more maps. Usually they wait.
They could give you new Titan types, you know.
Yeah, it does. Exactly.
Stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. So
I wanted to play the game first. I figured if I liked it enough, I'd go back and
I played the beta for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
knowing that the beta would only be a few days.
I got to tell you, we've had conversations in the past about how difficult it would be for somebody who had never really played first-person shooters or maybe hadn't played Call of Duty in a while to step into a modern Call of Duty game and be able to play it to any form of expertise. So it's very complicated game if you're not used to it,
right?
If you haven't been following along with each update. And I have to say, despite my years of experience with Call of Duty, Titanfall is a very complicated game.
It is.
I find it to be a little difficult.
Well, Respawn, the creators, is the old Infinity Ward that got fired, and they said, well, screw you. And so they did the early Call of Duties. It's a first-person shooter with a little additional thing that you can get in a giant mech. I like how you get in. The mech actually opens the door in its chest, picks you up, and puts you in it.
It does a nice effect where the world becomes available to you.
And they've added some nice things
to this game, which I think is interesting.
That's right. They've added wall running. You have a jump pack, so you can jump and jump again.
You really have to think vertically.
Yeah, you want to get to the high ground, apparently.
Even in some of the more complicated new Ghosts levels, there's a little bit of up and down, but nothing like this. This is, in Call of Duty, you'd run around the base of buildings, and you could see the skyscrapers extended up into the sky. But in this game, you could scale those skyscrapers.
Yeah, and you
get up
want
on top.
To. It's strategically beneficial.
It really
to take
does.
The high ground.
That's I don't. Innovative is a tough word, but it's a difference. Certainly,
that's enough. There's some cool weaponry. I like the smart gun. You can target four different people and choose four bullets. That's fun. I mean,
the only people I can kill are those grunt things, which I later discovered were computer controlled and not actual.
They're
people.
AIs. That's right. Yeah,
which explains my ability there. I don't know. I'm not great at it, I have to say. So
I watched. It was actually it was quite informative, although the audio quality was terrible. They had at South by Southwest a Titanfall launch party on Monday, and it was so awful. The sound really? Was just kept going out. Somebody's mic wasn't working. They were using the guys from Rooster Feet, whatever it is, and they were okay, but I did get a lot of strategy because they had a couple of the developers on, and they talked about some strategic stuff. Rooster Teeth, that's it, not feet, teeth.
I actually need some help with that. Microsoft has a video, some top tips about.
It's worth.
I've not watched it yet, but I probably will.
Yeah, to me that means it's a good game. There's a little strategy in it. You can get right into it and play it and get killed immediately. Padre SJ, Father Robert Ballester, had a late night Titanfall playing party last night here on Twit and broadcast that, which is neat. He was playing it on a PC. Origin had trouble. Thank you, Electronic Arts. And their servers were down for a considerable period of time, just like with The Sims launch, although I think they're back up now. So there's your Titanfall news.
I heard there were problems on Xbox Live. I didn't experience those.
No, maybe some slow lobby
joining. I wasn't
joining.
Playing it all day or anything. I just kind of went in and out.
It was good. I really enjoyed it. I think it's fun. I enjoy playing it.
Okay, what about you, Mary Jo? How was your Titanfall experience?
Did you enjoy it?
It was, yeah. You know, what I was interested in, actually, with this was the
Azure. It's running on Azure. Yeah, of course. It's got, it's virtualized Hadoop.
Is there a Hadoop component to?
There must be. There absolutely must be.
No, but that is a good point, because if you played on the PC, you were playing on Origin servers, which immediately crashed. If you played on the Xbox One, you were playing on Microsoft's Azure. And those were pretty robust. They did very well. Some people are saying it was down, but I maybe it was down in the middle of the night. But it worked very well for me, surprisingly well on launch day. So,
yeah. Which may be a bad sign, by the way. But
like, there's nobody playing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, that's a good point. We don't hear no numbers of PC versus Xbox players.
It seemed like there was plenty of excitement or plenty of interest anyway.
Oh, it was fun. I really enjoyed it. Okay, thank you, Mary Jo, for your patience. We now continue on.
I got some work done while you guys were talking.
With pen and pencil, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to come back with our tip, pick, beer, code name, and enterprise pick of the week. But before we do that, we should mention one of my picks, a great advertiser, great sponsor, people we love, Shutterstock.com. If you are in a business where you use stock images, I want you to consider. I know there are a lot of choices for stock images, but I want you to take a look at Shutterstock.com. If you're a blogger, if you do a website, a publication, if you need advertising images, if you need videos, go to Shutterstock.com. Click the footage tab. You can see all the videos there. They're just really some spectacular stuff. 1.6 million royalty-free stock videos in beautiful quality, very affordable prices. These are royalty-free, by the way, which means you buy them once, you can use them in any form. Stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. The best darn search engine ever. Let me see. What could we... Let's search for gamer. You can always search for nouns. So let's get some gamers. Here's some gamers. Okay. Lots of gamers. But you can also use a search engine to narrow it down. So you can have happy gamers. And then you're going to only get the happy gamers. Oh, she's so happy. There's a happy gamer. Or you can get the sad gamer. So the search engine is really good. Oh, poor sad gamer. Oh, by the way, yeah, while you're playing around with Shutterstock, I invite you to sign up. You do not need to give them a credit card. It's a free account. But when you sign up, you'll get free images every week. You'll also be able to use the Lightbox feature, which means you'll be able to take these very... Oh, she's a sad gamer's girlfriend. He's a happy gamer with a sad girlfriend. She's just sad, too, because all her friends are playing Titanfall. Nobody will text her. Nobody will email her. He's sad he just lost his Titan. Oh, he got kicked out. Oh, the little pilot got kicked out. She's sad for other reasons. I don't know why she's sad. Could be her outfit. Anyway, Shutterstock. Let me tell you, lots of images online here at Shutterstock.com. A great search engine. See, it's no good to have 30 million stock images if you can't find them, but you can, and that's what's great about Shutterstock. You can narrow it down with their color wheel to a color palette. They've got great apps for both Android and iOS, Webby award-winning apps. 34,667,303 images online right now. 242,000 new stock images added this week. Curated, so they're always great. You could drill down by subject, color, file type, gender, emotion, and more. Save them to a Lightbox. Share them with your friends, with your colleagues. Multilingual customer support, more than a dozen countries, full-time customer support throughout the week. It's Shutterstock. I want you to try it. Set up your account, create your Lightbox, and when you want to buy, use our offer code Windows314. Windows314, and you'll get 20% off any package. We have the very nice 25-image-a-day package. Great for a publication. And it's so great. You get 20% off. That's a big savings. Windows314, the offer code, Shutterstock.com. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking Microsoft Windows. Paul Thurrott has our tip of the week.
I wrote an article this week about mini tablets. I reviewed a bunch of them over the past several months. A bunch of Windows mini tablets, but also like the iPad mini, the various Android tablets, Kindle HDX, the Google Nexus 7, you know, so on and on and on. And in writing that, I have all these tablets sitting around the house. And sort of as a user, not as a reviewer, I kind of want to hone it down to the one or ones maybe that I'll actually use. And what I've discovered is that for what I use, it's actually really hard to pick one that makes the most sense. And without getting into the whole reason for that, I'll just highlight the Kindle software especially. The Amazon Kindle software, which I use the Kindle platform for books and also for magazines and newspaper subscriptions, graphic novels and comic books. This software is completely different on different platforms, and it's particularly lackluster on Windows and Windows Phone. In fact, the Windows and Windows Phone versions of the software are by far the most or the least full-featured. They are lacking the most. And this is a problem. And so I'd like to use like a Windows mini tablet, but you know, for a lot of the stuff that I would do on such a device, because it's kind of a reading device, it just doesn't work. I can't, you know, the Amazon Kindle software is just so terrible on Windows. So I kind of went through all of that stuff. And it sort of occurred to me over time, and based on some feedback I got from readers, was that for certain types of content, it doesn't really matter whether you stay within your preferred ecosystem. So, for example, in the case of the Kindle, I like to buy, when I buy a book, or if I subscribe to a magazine or a newspaper, or if I buy a graphic novel or a comic book, I do it through the Kindle, and then I can read it on whatever devices those things are compatible with. But you can kind of apply this out to different things. It turns out for other types of content where you're only going to read it or use it once, TV shows fall into this capacity, or if you're going to rent a movie, I mean, who cares where you rent the movie from? If you're only watching it once, I mean, you rent it on whatever device you may be using at that particular time. It doesn't matter. You don't have to stay within some ecosystem. And then, of course, music. If you are going to buy music from iTunes or Xbox Music or from Amazon MP3 or wherever you buy music, that music is no longer DRM encoded. It doesn't matter. You'd buy it from wherever. It doesn't matter. You can still use it wherever you want. And so I, as a sort of bit of general advice, I think a lot of us get kind of locked into this notion of, you know, we stop thinking about other things. You know, we're like, oh, book, I gotta buy it on the Kindle, you know. You know, maybe for a book, if it's a book you're going to read again, you know, maybe that makes sense to buy it where, you know, you're going to be. But for this other stuff, it doesn't necessarily matter. And it occurred to me that rather than limit myself by the Kindle software, I could start to look around and see whether other solutions made more sense. And that could help me choose different software to do the same thing, but maybe be able to stay within the Windows ecosystem. And so that kind of ties into my software pick of the week, which is
you're gonna get
the Barnes & Noble Nook software.
You're going to get a letter from Frank Shaw. You keep this up.
Did you see what happened to Farhad Manjoo?
No, what happened?
He wrote an article. His first column, as he joined the New York Times, he took David Pogue's place.
Oh, well, this was asinine.
He said, how to survive the next wave of technology extension.
This was crazy.
And he basically said, buy Apple hardware, use Google services, and buy media from Amazon. These are the three most likely.
This is nutsoid advice, by the way. But, yeah. Here's the problem. At a high level, that looks like it makes sense. But, you know, I live with this stuff. And what I'm saying is that, it actually, as you get into the nitty-gritty of this, it's weird what the differences are. The Kindle software on the iPad is better than the Kindle software on the Kindle, which is messed up.
Right,
So there are some weird differences, and it really varies according to the software. The Kindle is one I'm kind of intimately familiar with because I use it so much. All I can say is that from the perspective of a Windows user, whether you're on phone or Windows tablets, is garbage. It's really lackluster. So the software pick is the Nook software. It's the Nook, you know, like the modern version of the Nook software. Because I bought so many books through Amazon, I'm not going to, you know, start buying books today on the Nook. But the Nook software on Windows is actually really good for a bunch of different things. So, for example, that software supports periodicals, you know, magazines and newspapers, where the Kindle doesn't, by and large, on Windows. It supports PDF files, which is neat, especially if you have a full-size tablet. And it supports EPUB files, which is kind of a big deal for me right now because, of course, I've been working on this book. And before it's published to the Kindle and Nook marketplaces, I let people download it in Mobi or EPUB formats. And the Kindle software for non, you know, like basic Kindle devices, like the Kindle software for tablets, for Windows, you know, for whatever, does not work with Mobi files. Like I said, the Kindle stuff drives me crazy. The only problem with Nook is that, I've done trial subscriptions now just to test it of the magazines that I actually subscribe to elsewhere, just to kind of see what the experience is like on Windows. And actually the Nook software is fantastic. And somewhere out there, there's someone shaking his head because I talked to some of the guys that work on the software almost a year ago at Build, and they were telling me how great it was. And my response was basically like, I'm sure it is, but I kind of locked into this Kindle thing and I'm sorry, you know. But for throwaway content, essentially, like magazine subscriptions, where you're typically going to read it once, or a newspaper, you're going to read it once, or you know, other types of content like these other capabilities. I mean, actually, there's no reason you can't use both. There's absolutely no reason you can't use both. So that's kind of interesting. The only problem with Nook is it doesn't work on Windows Phone. And so if you were going to go Nook kind of across the board, you wanted to read books especially, there is at least Kindle software for the Windows Phone that you can read books on, and that's about it. And to my knowledge, there isn't Nook software yet. So a little bit of a downside, but...
You know what is crazy about that? No Nook on Windows Phone. Do you remember when Microsoft did that deal with Nook? They invested $300 million in them. One of the biggest deliverables listed in the filing on that was Nook for Windows Phone.
Really?
Yes. It has to be coming. I mean, I know it's been so long, but there's no reason for it not to be there. Yeah. All I can say, I will say, though, for whatever, if you compare the Kindle software with the Nook software side by side on Windows, in Windows 8, the Nook software is much better. It's much better. They're not even comparable. The Kindle software is great on other platforms. So if you do have an iPad or, you know, an Android device, whatever, it's great. But on Windows, the Nook software is absolutely the best one.
And there's no, like, third-party general ebook reading stuff like Stanza or anything like that, huh?
There probably is. I mean, I'm looking specifically at content that would be protected here. So
yeah.
If you want to subscribe to a, I mean, there are other.
Well, if it's protected, you have to use the app.
In other words, I want to read magazine subscriptions. So the magazine subscriptions on tablets are kind of interesting because not always, but mostly they let you flip through what looks like a PDF of the magazine and you can kind of zoom in if you want to read it that way. But there's also like a reading mode where you can see just the text. And when you do reading mode, it works like a Kindle or a Nook book where you can change the size and the type of the font and the background color and all that kind of stuff. It works well at night if you want to, you know, turn down the brightness and change the color scheme or whatever. And so you kind of have your choice there. And, you know, in that capacity, there's no comparison. I mean, the Nook software is much, much better. So there I am.
There you have it. Time for our enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
Yes. So we've talked a lot about the end of support for Windows XP on April 8th. But there's another Microsoft product that also is ending support on April 8th, and it's Exchange Server 2003, which, believe it or not, a lot of people still run. So this week I noticed on the Exchange team blog on TechNet, which has a cute name. It's You Had Me at EHLO. You have me at hello.
Hello. That's funny.
They did a really great post where they talked about a migration toolkit for people who are still on Exchange 2003. And they list so many resources. I'm not going to give you the blog URL because it's too long, of course. But if you just look for the You Had Me at LO, you'll see their top post from March 10th. It lists out, here are all the things you should be thinking about and what's in different packages of Exchange, different versions compared, what's supported, not supported. It's really a great set of resources and links for anybody who's still on Exchange and is trying to get off as soon as possible, which you should be.
I love it. 2003 Exchange.
Yeah, 2003. Yeah.
Your code name pick of the week.
Codename pick of the week is Helios. And as we Microsoft codename watchers know, a lot of times Microsoft reuses codenames. So there is a Helios that is a Microsoft research project that has to do with operating systems. But there's another Helios that's more recent. And this one is having to do with ASP.NET. And the reason I'm making it the codename pick of the week is I was browsing through some of the sessions that Microsoft's going to have at TechEd, which is in May 12th. And I noticed there's a session called The Future of .NET on the Server. Scott Hanselman's one of the presenters of that. And it talked about this project Helios, which has to do with the future of ASP.NET. And Scott Hanselman and David Fowler are going to do a whole presentation about what this means. If you're a developer who's been using the server-side framework, how you're going to now start thinking about ASP.NET differently, how it's going to use OWIN, O-W-I-N, the Open Web Interface for .NET, and how it's going to plug into IIS. So it sounds like there's some pretty big changes coming for ASP.NET, and TechEd may be one of the places that we hear about them. If we don't hear about them at Build first, that is.
Cool.
So look for Helios. Listen for that code name.
And let's see. So that means all that's left is beer.
Actually, before you do that, yes, I have a tip for you, Mary Jo.
Yes.
Apparently, Google is looking for retail space in New York City.
Oh.
This raises the ugly spectacle that Google may open a store in New York City before Microsoft.
Oh, my God.
Don't make me cry on the show, Paul Thurrott. It'll be ugly. I have one more tip. Can I add one more fun tip for the people who are listening live? I'm going to let you guys have this tip first before I blog this out.
All right.
Build Blogger Bash coming up at the Build conference. It's finally, the website is finally public, buildbloggerbash.com. If you go there, hurry up, RSVP, because once I blog this, I think people are going to run an RSVP. It's April 3rd, 7 to 10 p.m. All your favorite Microsoft watchers will be there. And it's free. You don't even have to have a badge for Build to go to it. It's going to be held at the Southside Spirit House in San Francisco. So go RSVP real quick before I tweet and blog this.
Well, that's a good group of people there. Wow.
Yeah. And we're hoping we can do our Windows Weekly Live that week with you, Leo.
Yeah, Alex mentioned that.
Yeah. So it's your Friday. Day off, it's my day I fear. Off, April 3rd. I know.
Well, I'll have to look at my schedule. I wouldn't mind coming down. And it's in the evening.
Actually, more important, maybe we should talk about the show.
What do you mean the show? Build? That show?
Yeah. Because we're going to be in San Francisco, maybe we should come up to Petaluma again. But that would mean doing the show on a Friday.
No, that's just what Mary Jo was saying. I should do the show there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Right. I'm sorry. Oh, that too.
It's up to you.
Possibly too, I guess.
Oh, after the Build Blogger Bash or before the Build Blogger Bash come up here?
No. Yeah, we were thinking like last time, you know how we came on Friday?
Yeah, I wasn't here for that either.
No, you were, weren't you?
No,
you weren't.
I wasn't. Darn. I was in Romania.
Is that right?
Yeah, remember he was
in foreign land.
He was far away.
I think it's too late for me to do that this time, but I'll find some other excuse not to be here.
Oh.
No.
Now that I know.
Oh. We'll figure it out. I don't know. This is Alex sprang this on me just moments before we began.
Oh, did he? Okay.
So I'll have to look at my schedule. Certainly, everybody should go to the Build Blogger Bash, and everybody's going to Build. And we'll figure out a way to, you know, we got to cover Build.
Yeah.
So maybe we could do it down there. That'd be fun. I don't know. We'll have to think about that. I'm going to think about that. Mm-hmm. Consult with the authorities.
Good.
Yeah. Now let's talk about beer.
So I always recommend very high alcohol beers, I've been noticing, when I do the beer pick. But I this week have been drinking some low alcohol beers that are still good. And one of them is a new Stone beer. And Stone, you know, they make a lot of very heavy, high alcohol beers. But they have this new one called Stone Go To IPA. It's only 4.5%, but it's still very nicely hopped. And it's, as they call it, sessionable, which means you can drink a lot of them and still be coherent and not under the table like you would if you drank some of their bigger
the
beers.
Term for that? Sessionable?
Yes, sessionable. You can have many sessions of beer.
Wow, you beer drinkers really go to great lengths.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. So I had that this week. I really liked it.
Session
I'm not
IPA.
Usually a fan of those kind of light That's beers, funny. But it's a good one. Stone Go To.
I think that must be the only alcoholic beverage where they actually have a label that says you can drink more of this.
Without keeling over.
Please be lying down in a bed while you drink this. It's for the best.
Stone Go To IPA. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Awesome. From the Stone Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. No, that's not true.
No.
Mary Jo Foley is sessionable. Yes, indeed. Why, I could take a case. I could drink a case of you and still be on my feet in the words
Joni.
Of Joni. Joni, absolutely. You'll find her at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's where she blogs. Paul Thurrott is at the Super Site for Windows, Win Super Site. And his gamer tag is Thurrott, right?
It's my name, Paul Thurrott.
It's Paul Thurrott? All right.
Paul Space Thurrott.
If you would like to challenge him for a little game of Titanfall.
This will be a good time to do it because I'm not very good at it.
I should
try it sometime just to see what somebody who's never, ever played a shooter game would do.
It'd be so funny if suddenly you go,
it's
fairly
complex.
This is really fun. I could play this. This is sessionable. I could play this all day. Dr. Mom says, what exactly is Titanfall?
It's a game. I was going to ask you, what exactly is sessionable?
I think Joni said it best when she said, I could drink a case of you and still be on my feet. We do this show each and every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. It's got a new time UTC because we are in summertime and UTC never is in summertime. So that means it's 1800 UTC, and you can do the calculations yourself from that point on. We do love it if you watch live, but that's certainly not a requirement. You can always join us after the fact, on-demand audio and video, available at twit.tv/windows, on youtube.com/windowsweekly, and wherever better internet programming is aggregated. Paul, don't fall into that cup. That thing's like a small swimming pool. It's, man.
Yep.
Yum, yum, yum. It's full of NyQuil, ladies and gentlemen. please join us next week. We'll have another thrilling, gripping edition of Windows Weekly.